But then, listen, hey, you've seen comedians before. We always have loads of stories about hotels because that's our life, right? But even in real life, I've moved 12 times in the last 10 years, some ridiculous amount of house moves I've done in the last while, which is, you know, depressing. And to the young men here, you may have heard this thing about how it's the most stressful thing in the world to move. And yeah, it is and it isn't, right? But, you know, there's some upside, right? You know, this may bore you because you haven't done it yet, but trust me, there is an upside in which you get a look around other people's houses. Right? And we all like looking around other people's houses. You can tell that by the amount of property shows, you know, whether it's like location, or grand designs, or Property Ladder is my favorite show. Not just because, you know, there's property there, but also because uniquely there's an expert that nobody pays any attention to. Very few television shows employ somebody to go in and go Magnolia and be completely ignored by the people where they go, no, not Magnolia, Sarah. We're going to paint it black and tarmac at them the floor and then create hooks that people have to drag themselves up and we're still going to make 70 grand of profit. And Sarah Beeny's getting furious going, it's not real profit. And she's pregnant again. She's like a one-woman continuity disaster area, you know? You watch Property Ladder going, Jesus, Sarah, how long has it taken me to paint this fucking house? You've had 3 children in the time that they've been doing up that outside toilet. But it is just nice to look into other people's houses. How many of you live in a house? The majority of you. And how many of you live in a house that has a ground floor? Yeah, the majority of you. Here's a little hint, here's a little request. Put up some curtains or some like blinds or Venetians or something. And if you're not going to do that, don't have a big miserable puss on your face staring out when I stare in. I can't understand people who look miserably at you when you look into their house. Put up some curtains, otherwise I'm looking into your feckin' house, right? And don't get me wrong, like I don't vault over the garden wall and run up to the window and go poof. And squeak my face across the glass. I like what you've done with the place. I just mean you're walking past a house, it has no curtains, you look in. And people are always sitting there going, what the fuck are you doing looking in? And I'm sorry, I'm going to look in, right? Just because you're sitting there reading like a slut. You knew I was going to look in, didn't you? Put up some curtains, otherwise it's like having cleavage on the front of your house. I'm going to look in, right? And look at me, I'm a big guy, right? You know what I mean? Like, I'm no model for anyone when it comes to health. I winter well, as we said, euphemistically. And I know this, it gets reflected to me in weird ways. We went to buy a car during the year, myself and the wife went to buy a car, and we're sitting in the garage, and on the garage forecourt, they had a little two-seater sports car, and I said, listen, I know we're not going to buy, can I just sit in it? Because I've always wanted one, can I just sit in it? She goes, all right, you can. And I sat in the little two-seater sports car, and I just looked at her and went, how do I look? She goes, you look like Noddy. I went into Harvey Nicks like a fool. I went into Harvey Nicks, right? And I was sitting in Harvey Nicks, and I saw this little in the menswear department, the little jacket. I thought, this is quite nice. And I went to the guy on the counter and said, I'm sorry, would you have this in my... Which is as far as I got before a hand shot up to my mouth, and he went, don't say another word. Just get out. Just get out now. We've nothing for you here. Just leave now, Shrek, before I light a torch and chase you out of the building. What? For you, that, I'd have to sell you 7 of them and stitch them together into some sort of pelt that you could wrap around yourself in your cave for the winter. Get out, you're blocking the light to the shop. Get out. And I've tried the gym. Jesus, I've tried the gym. I just couldn't take the amount of holding. They're obsessed in the gym with getting it to hold thing. In the real world, I pick up heavy thing, I know where it's going, and I bring it there immediately. I don't stand around counting to 10 with the heavy thing in my hand. I don't want to be a removals man for an indecisive client. Going, ooh, piano there, I can't decide. And I'm there going, that's okay, I trained for just such a situation. And the day two pain of the gym, when you go back to the gym and you're in agony and every bit of you is in pain. And the gym guy, you go up to him and go, why am I in so much pain? And he goes, that's because you're using muscles you haven't used in years. And you look at him and go, why the fuck are we wasting our time with those muscles? Clearly, I don't need them. Market forces have driven them to waste away. Let them die. Just give me one big one on each leg and a couple in the arms. That's all I need. But no, I spend hours skiing. That's all they make me do, ski, like I'm moving to the Arctic at some stage. And you're on that machine praying for snow, dreaming of snow, going, someday the snow will come and then they'll need me. I'll be the one who's trained to get help on that day. I'll be the one they need to go over the glacier and rescue everyone else in the gym. Not you, rowing machine man. You're feck all used to us that day. I'm sorry, I get very angry towards the end of that bit. It is a pleasure to be standing in front of you. It's a pleasure, by the way, after a tour which has gone all over Ireland and all over the UK, to be back in London, ladies and gentlemen. It's a delight to be back at home, in one regard. And may I also say, it's interesting to be back in London now, because we left you, and then when we came back, things had changed in London, in a very subtle way. It's like one of those short stories you read as a teenager, one of these science fiction stories where you'd go into the past, right, and then you'd like sneeze on a pterodactyl or step on something, right, and then you come back and the whole world has changed. We went to Basingstoke, Croydon and Aylesbury, and when they came back, you'd elected Fat Andy Warhol as the mayor. And frankly, if I knew that's what you could get from hosting Have I Got News For You, I wouldn't have settled for Mock the Week. Here's my favourite current application. There's a company called Clear Blue. Are you familiar with Clear Blue? Come on, half of you know who Clear Blue are, right? Half of you just don't want to shout it, and the other half, the deeper voiced half, are kind of going, well, I'm sure I've seen the box around the bathroom somewhere. Paul, do you know what they make?
No.
You don't? Do you want to take a guess?
IT stuff.
IT. They make IT. Well... In a manner of speaking, there's information, all right, and there's a certain amount of technology used to get the information, yeah. They make pregnancy tests. It's a very specific form of information that you're acquiring here, right? There was a guy in Dublin who I asked, he went, are they an internet service provider? You go, it's very difficult to check your pregnancy over the internet. You kind of have to scan yourself in. But Clear Blue came up with a new pregnancy test, a more kind of advanced one, right? And like, as judging by the response there, it's a product 100% bought by women, right? But women buy pregnancy tests. That's all people buy. And it's marketed to them. And they came up with a slogan, which I thought was the worst slogan for a product aimed at women, right? It was Clear Blue, the most sophisticated piece of technology you will ever urinate on. Now, no woman finds that appealing as a marketing strategy. Whereas to men, that's the holy grail. We've been urinating on things our entire lives and we have never thought to grade them technologically. And already we have a winner, right? But women, you don't, because women go into booths and you go into a wall of pregnancy tests, you don't sit there going, right, I want the one with the liquid crystal display that'll download MP3s. That's a pregnancy test for me. You want the one that gives you discretion and accuracy. They're the major things you want in a pregnancy test. You don't go, gee, I want the one now that'll play It's Raining Men by the Weather Girls as a result of arriving. You're a really good crowd, like whatever. There's some crowds you kind of have to work and kind of meld them together, like whatever. But you're there. You're there already, right? Now, hey. Please, I don't want you to take them. That's not meant some fucking shitty, showbizzy, hey, you're a great crowd kind of a way, right? It just indicates that I judge you as much as you judge me. So we just go, we're equal there, right? Right? No, because there are gigs you do. I did a nightmare gig I did once in London, terrible gig I did once, on the day that England won the Rugby World Cup. Right, it was about 4.5 years ago now. All right. Let's not kick it off. It's fucking ages ago now, right? And besides, Rich, it's rugby. Like, I couldn't give a thunder and fuck about rugby. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And probably a lot of people like that. In Ireland in particular, it's played by, you know, some fairly well-off guys from well-off schools. So frankly, if they lose, it's like, ooh, boo-hoo, rich kid. You know, it's difficult to get the emotion of, oh, no, you'll have to go to your job in the city and cry now. But it is, you know, and besides, here's my major problem with rugby. Why is the ball pointy exactly? What, is that to introduce a fun, random element into it all? Oh, no, the ball's going to bounce. Where's it going to bounce? Oh, it's gone mad! It's gone mad! It's just like a very muscular form of crazy golf. But I did a gig on the day that England won the Rugby World Cup about 4.5 years ago, 5 years ago now, and it was in a pub called The Bedford in Balham, right? And there's a very good comedy club called there. Very good. Great pub, great club, right? This wasn't its finest hour, by the way, before we get too excited. I arrived at 10 o'clock to do the gig, not knowing that the room was filled with people who'd been watching the rugby match since 9 o'clock that morning. There's a bit of a myth, by the way, that a bit of booze helps the comedy crowd along, right? They're a bit of booze. There's a window of opportunity, about one drink to five drinks. These people have been drinking for 13 hours by the time I arrived. They were so drunk, they couldn't remember the beginning of a joke when you got to the end. Which is unhelpful in what I'm trying to do, that I hit them with a punch and they go, sorry, what? And you go, no, do you not remember a minute ago when I said I was allergic to rabbits? Did that go from past? Do you not really remember that? They go, oh, no, I didn't hear that. Oh, that's, yeah, that would have been funny, yeah. So I'm standing in front of this crowd trying to do a gig, and it was tough, it was very tough. And I can, you know, I can mess around with people and I can have a bit of fun, and if worse comes to worse, I'll do my series of award-winning mimes. But this was not working. This was tough, and I got out of there, and I just kind of stood at the end of the room, cold sweat, just going, oh, that was horrible. And normally, if it goes badly, you don't hang around. You get out of there quickly. You just, there's no way you want to hover and be in the venue where you just may have almost died, right? But I made an exception that night. I said, no, I want to watch the rest of this show. I want to see how the guy who comes on after me does, because the guy who's coming on after me is a magician. Comedians hate magicians. I know you may not know this, but we can't stand magicians because they practice and practice and practice and then they pretend that it's magic. That gets on my tits in a huge way, right? Oh no, where's the card gone? It's magic. No, you were lonely as a teenager and you practiced for hours. That's where the fucking card has gone, right? Concert pianists also practice for hours, but they don't go out on stage and go, Jesus, where is the music coming from? This is incredible. It's like it's flowing out of my hands. It's amazing. So this guy goes out, the magician goes out, goes to somebody in the front row with a pack of cards, fans out the deck of cards like that. He goes, pick a card. And the guy picks a card and he shows it to the crowd. It's like the 10 of clubs or something, right? And the magician takes the card off and makes it disappear. And then he makes the pack disappear. And then he launches into a standard issue magician horseshit bit about where have they gone? Are they here in another realm? Maybe they're taking the part particle by particle in a separate dimension. Shall we ever see them again? Ha, ha, ha. Oh, this kind of guff, right? This really irritating bit where they pad out the middle, right? During which time the audience, thum, have completely forgotten not only that it was a 10 of clubs, but really that they were showing anything at all. So when the magician eventually goes round to his finale where he gets a melon, a fresh melon, and he opens the melon up, and from within the fleshy pulp of the melon, he withdraws this thing, which he unfurls, and oh my God, it's the 10 of clubs. The entire room just goes, ooh, melon. They haven't eaten in 13 hours. They're staring at this food, just drooling. Some of them are dying of scurvy at this stage, and now there's a source of vitamin C open on the stage in front of them. They're just looking, just going, geez, melon, oh, this is fantastic. Oh, is this what he does? Is this a buffet? Is this what he's going to do? Is this going to bring out more food? I wonder what's next. I hope it's chips. Oh, I have a bit of chips now. Chips. You have not lived until you've been at a gig where there's a magician trying to show off a soggy 10 of clubs that smells of melon to a crowd going, chip. Now, one of the joys, by the way, of this, as opposed to any... Are you again, Danny? All right? You with me? Okay, good. One of the joys, by the way, being in London is that, hey, this is where I live, you know, like, and that's nice. Although, actually, when you tour, you get to hang out in places, and that's kind of cool. I mean, and more weird stuff happens when you're hanging out in places. In Manchester, for example, we went into the hotel, and my wife came with me to Manchester, and we walked into the hotel, and she suddenly stops and goes, this is very familiar. And I said, have you been here before? And she goes, no, this is where Leanne Battersby came when she was a prostitute. But the weirder things happen when you go away. Like, for example, where were we? In Liverpool, and we were talking to the guy in the hotel after we come back from the gig, myself and the tour manager, and we said, listen, what should we do? What should we do? We're in Liverpool. And your man goes, well, you want to go for a drink? Just down the corner, there's VIPs. And we said, what's VIPs? And he says, it's a lap dancing club, open till 6 in the morning. And he said it like that, and I went, ugh, that's like the most depressing thing I've ever heard in my life. Who needs to be lap danced at 6 in the morning with sunlight streaming in through the window and some poor Eastern European girl pressed up against the bar trying to sleep with her ass just going on autopilot, just trying to get any kip at all. Jesus, any cash. Jeez, 5:45, could I please sleep? Some of those places are so depressing. There's one in Birmingham called Medusa. A lap dancing club called Medusa. Google it. Would it kill you to look up who Medusa was before you name the business and you print the napkins and the menus? One of possibly the worst choice of icon for a fucking lap dancing club. Our dancers are sexy, they've got snakes for hair, and they'll turn you to stone. Yeah, you have to look at your dancers in your shield. Jesus, the tits and her are fantastic. Ridiculous idea. There was one, the best name I've ever seen for a lap dancing club, again, which I didn't go into, is one in New York. There's one in New York called Mixed Emotions. And no name better sums up the journey that you go on visiting a lap dancing club than Mixed Emotions. You're in there going, you're so hot, but I love my wife. No!